Chaitanya and the Goswamis of Vrindavan. The writings of the Goswamis of Vrindavan have, since the early 17th century, been the foundation for all Chaitanya Vaishnava theology, and it is hard to find in the tradition any figure that is invested with greater authority than these six individuals. Yet the extent of their relationship with Krishna Chaitanya, the leader and main source of inspiration for the school, has been called into question by several prominent scholars of the tradition. Already during his lifetime, Chaitanya was venerated by his followers as a divine descent or avatar of Krishna, and his followers in Bengal composed several hagiographies about his life and teachings. Prominent scholars of the tradition, like Biman Bihari Majumdar, Ramakanta Chakravarti, and Hitesh Ranjan Sanyal, particularly Bengalis, and we'll come back to that at the end, have assessed the relationship of the Goswamis and Chaitanya variously, but the general view is that the Goswamis of Vrindavan cared far less for Chaitanya than did the Vaishnavas of Bengal, and instead directed all their devotion to Krishna. Chaitanya was for them merely a means to an end, an upaya, whereas for the Bengalis he was an end in itself, an upaya, or the upaya. As Hitesh Ranjan Sanyal puts it, according to the Goswamis, Krishna is the absolute reality, the source of supreme love. Hence he is the upaya and the main object of worship. The theological and metaphysical system of the Goswamis have been built up around the central theme of the love between Krishna and the gopis. The Goswamis adored Chaitanya as a great guru and the ideal devotee, and even implicitly recognized him as the supreme reality, as God. But they have never projected him as the Paramatattva, the supreme reality. The Goswamis looked upon Chaitanya as an upaya, that is, the means of attaining the desired goal, which is access into the land of eternal love, wherein resides the ultimate reality, rather than as the upaya, that is, the ultimate reality itself. Hence, according to the Goswamis, the worship of Chaitanya is not a valid proposition. This view is, I argue, an oversimplification that does not do justice to the complexity of the theology of either the Bengali Vaishnavas or the Vrindavan Goswamis. In this paper, I argue that Chaitanya occupies a central position in the theology of the Goswamis. I will explore the role he plays in their theology, paying particular attention to their views of Chaitanya's divinity and his importance in their theology of devotion. Though, as I attempt to demonstrate, the Goswamis attached a lot of importance to Chaitanya, I will argue by way of conclusion that they were also careful of not emphasizing him too much in their writings, as they wanted to establish a Vaishnava culture in Vrindavan that crossed sectarian boundaries. The authors I'm studying are five of the six Goswamis: Sanatan, Rupa, Jiva, Raghunath Dasa, and Gopalabhatta. Raghunath Bhatta, the sixth Goswami, did not leave any writings. I've limited myself to these five, and in this paper I will present particularly on one, on Sanatan, just because time doesn't allow me to do more. But in the bigger project, I've limited myself to these five individuals, primarily because other scholars have done so. It should be noted, however, that the idea that there were only six leading followers of Chaitanya and Braj is misleading, as there were more Vaishnavas writing in Braj in the 16th century who helped articulate the school's theology, and there were other important leaders of the community, as we will see. Among these of particular importance, especially for our purposes here, is Krishnadas Kaviraj. Krishnadas, or Kaviraj Goswami, as he is still often called by Gaudiya Vaishnavas, is generally considered to be a student of the Goswamis, since he himself writes so in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and this is a quote from him: Sri Rupa, Sanatan, Bhatta Raghunath, Sri Jiva, Gopal Bhatta, and Dasa Raghunath, these six gurus are my teachers, my Shiksha gurus. That Krishnadas is not counted among the six is because the very notion that these are the six Goswamis comes from him, from statements like this passage. However, though Krishnadas here humbly refers to himself as a student of these six, he was their peer and a close friend. Here's a picture of the six. He grew up in Bengal, and as is told in a dream, he received a vision of Nityananda, who told him to go to Vrindavan, which he did immediately the next morning. Exactly when this happened is unclear, but we do know that he must have been still young and spent most of his life in Braj, where he passed away sometime after 1615. It seems Krishnadas lived in Braj already before 1540, so that's 75 years earlier, around the time that some of the principal works of the Goswamis were written, and had by then already established himself as an accomplished poet, as Raghunath Das refers to him in a work that's composed around that time, as the king of poets, the Kavi Bhupati. Krishnadasa does live for many decades in the company of the six Goswamis. He was about the same age as Gopal Bhatta, Raghunath Bhatta, Raghunath Das, and Jiva, which is all of the six Goswamis apart from Rupa and Sanatan. He's referred to as a peer in their writings, and a case can therefore be made to consider his works alongside those of the Goswamis. In terms of literary output, Krishnadas surpasses some of the others. He composed three important works, an extensive commentary on the Krishna Karnamrita of Vilva Mangala, the Govinda Lilamrita, a very lengthy poetic meditation on Krishna's daily activities, written at the request of Raghunath Das, and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, his magnum opus, a masterful hagiography of Chaitanya that places Chaitanya's life in a theological light of unprecedented sophistication, as Tony has shown, and also, interestingly, his only Bengali composition. By considering Krishnadas a student rather than a peer of the Goswamis, the Chaitanya Charitamrita is not seen as an outcome of the Goswamis' project, but as a distillation and application of their teachings by the next generation, which I think one can argue that it's actually quite integral sort of to what they were trying to establish. As we will see below, however, the Goswamis' theology of Chaitanya is Krishnadasa's theology, and most of what the Chaitanya Charitamrita tells us of Chaitanya's identity is also found in the writings of the Goswamis. Some brief context for the contact the Goswamis, and particularly Rupa and Sanatan, had with Chaitanya. Though they had exchanged some letters prior to their first meeting, Rupa and Sanatan first met Chaitanya in person in Ramkeli, a village near Gaur, the capital of Sultan Hussein Shah's kingdom. The brothers served in Gaur at the court, where they worked in close proximity to the Sultan. Chaitanya was on his way to Vrindavan, but stopped in Ramkeli with the express purpose to meet Rupa and Sanatan, his servants of old, as one hagiography puts it. Chaitanya travelled with a huge following, but was dissuaded by the brothers to continue his journey, as it would not be proper to go on pilgrimage with such a crowd, and lest it would draw too much attention from the Sultan and cause unnecessary communal tensions. Later, Chaitanya set out again to Vrindavan, this time accompanied by just a few companions. On his return from that successful pilgrimage, Chaitanya stopped in Allahabad, or Prayag. Rupa and his younger brother Anupama, the father of Jiva Goswami, travelled to Allahabad to meet the master and spent 10 days there with him. Chaitanya instructed Rupa to travel onwards to Vrindavan on pilgrimage and afterwards come to visit him in Puri, where he had settled in Orissa. Continuing his journey back to Orissa, Chaitanya came to Varanasi, where he met Sanatana and spent 2 months with him, and then told him to travel onwards to Vrindavan as well before coming to see him in Orissa. On their return from Vrindavan, Anupam passed away, and Rupa continued alone to Puri, where he stayed for 10 months. Shortly after Rupa left Puri to settle his affairs in Bengal, to renounce his position at the Sultan's court for good, and to then permanently settle in Braj, Sanatan arrived. So there's kind of this constant missing of each other, of Rupa and Sanatan. Sanatan stayed in Chaitanya's company for several months and was introduced to all his principal devotees before Chaitanya sent him to Vrindavan. Though Sanatan does not discuss specific incidents of Chaitanya's life in Puri, his stay in the town clearly left a very profound impression on him, for he praises both Puri and Jagannatha profusely in his writings. um, Murari Gupta, a close friend of Chaitanya from Navadvip, who wrote the oldest hagiographical work on Chaitanya, possibly even during Chaitanya's lifetime, already writes that Rupa and Sanatan were entrusted with a special task. Describing Chaitanya's first encounter with Sanatan in Ramkeli, Murari has Chaitanya exclaim, "You are a resident of Vrindavan. This is the truth. This is the truth. No doubt about it." Later, when he met Rupa and Sanatan again in Allahabad and Varanasi, respectively, Murari claims Chaitanya instructed them to rediscover the places of Krishna's play and write treatises on devotion. To Rupa in Allahabad, Murari says that Chaitanya said, "Travel to Mathura and honor my order. You will there reveal the play of Sri Radha and Krishna, which adorns Vrindavan. This pleases me, I have no doubt." Actually, I have this here. Sorry, this is a bit out of order. Yeah, and then this is what Murari says he told to Sanatan. "You should go to Vrindavan, you should study the sacred text on devotion, reveal the lost sacred sites, and reveal their greatness. And by this, devotion will become firmly established." These instructions are reiterated in the hagiographies of Vrindavan Das and Kavi Karnapura, who were both active in Bengal, and later by Krishnadas Kaviraj in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Murari Gupta writes that Chaitanya intended to join them in Braj and help them accomplish these tasks, but Krishnadas, writing more than half a century later, when it's obvious that Chaitanya never settled in Braj, has Chaitanya say that he will do so through them, that he will help them, so that he will establish these tasks through Rupa and Sanatan. Though these events are described with significant differences in the different biographies of Chaitanya, there is a remarkable unanimity about why Rupa and Sanatan lived in Braj and wrote the books they did. This was part of Chaitanya's mission, and they were blessed by Chaitanya to do so. Krishnas Kaviraj and Kavi Karnapur claim that during the periods in which they were together, Chaitanya taught both Rupa and Sanatan the principles of his devotional theology, and that these instructions formed the basis of their later writings. Some scholars have doubted the veracity of this. Krishnadas' account of this relies extensively on the Goswami's works, as Bibi Majumdar has highlighted, paraphrasing and even citing texts the Goswamis had not yet written at that time. In their writings, Rupa and Sanatan demonstrate a level of learning that is not mastered in but a few years, but that is the result of a lifelong pursuit of scholarship. And when they first met Chaitanya and Ramkeli, they were already known for their scholarly expertise, which is undoubtedly one of the reasons Chaitanya chose them for the task he assigned them. Though Krishnadas's account of the teachings is clearly not an exact record of what Chaitanya may have said, it does seem rather implausible that a person with the vast learning and intellectual acumen of Rupa or Sanatan would not discuss the nature of devotion with Chaitanya when living with him for an extended period of time. Indeed, Rupa praises Chaitanya as producing, quote, "a continuous feast for all the devotee bees, caused by their fondness for the flowing honey of his sweet words that trickle from his lotus mouth." Sanskrit poetry
trickle,
there.
Is that what you said?
When he begins to speak, Rupa writes elsewhere, "an abundance of fortune unfolds." As we will see below, Rupa and Sanatan write that the type of devotion they teach in their works was the unique gift of Chaitanya, and both acknowledge that their works on devotion originate from him. In the Vaishnava Toshani, Sanatan's commentary on the 10th book of the Bhagavata, he writes, this is a quote, "I bring homage to Chaitanya Deva, who revealed to me meanings of the verses which Sridhar Swami did not show, by his specific explanations on each of these," thereby implying that he read this section with him. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa writes, "Though wretched, I have commenced the writing of this book, inspired in the heart by him whose lotus feet I worship, Hari or Chaitanya Deva." Similarly, Sanatan declares in the beginning of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita that the contents of the work derive from his encounters with Chaitanya. This is a quote, "This book gathers the essence of all the treatises on devotion to the Lord which has been experienced in Chaitanya Deva, through or by his beautiful form." In his commentary on this verse, Sanatan explains that this experience arose from seeing Chaitanya's special dignity manifested in his golden body dressed as a sannyasi. culling the essence of the devotional text was not difficult, he continues, by the special grace of the Lord that arose from direct experience, he says. At the end of his commentary on the Brihadbhagavatamrita, Sanatana again offers his respects to Chaitanya. Quote, may the Lord in the blessed form of Chaitanya be always pleased with my entire effort of writing this book, which he himself set in motion. Not all these statements necessarily imply that Chaitanya actually taught them what these texts contain, but it is clear that in their minds what they wrote they did indeed learn from Chaitanya. Whether this was through direct instruction or merely by witnessing Chaitanya's own devotion is largely irrelevant for our purposes here. S.K. Day is probably right in stating that, quote, how much of these teachings is Chaitanya's and how much their own will never be definitely known, but it is probable that much of them, written within a few years after his death, was directly inspired by his personal example and teaching. Now, the Goswamis lived and wrote in the context of a growing community of Vaishnavas that settled in Braj in the middle and second half of the 16th century. It seems some of its members settled in Braj specifically to live with the Goswamis, and the Goswamis became the community's natural leaders, specifically Rupa and Sanatana. They established some of the principal temples and organized its worship. Rupa established the Govindadev temple, Sanatana the temple of Madan Mohan or Madan Gopal, as he generally calls him, Gopal Bhatta the temple of Radha Raman, Jiva Datta of Radha Damodar, and Raghunath Dasa developed the sacred site of Radha Kunda. What do we know of this community's devotion to Chaitanya? Though the Goswamis wrote most of their works in praise of Krishna and established the worship of Krishna in their temples, it is clear that there was a lot of attention given to Chaitanya as well. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas claims that, quote, the wealth of their life are Nityananda and Sri Chaitanya, and they know nothing but devotion to Radha and Krishna. As we will see below, this is an apt description. Though they focused on the worship of Radha and Krishna in their writings and in their worship, after all, they reside in the divine land of Radha and Krishna, Chaitanya was clearly not forgotten, and his life was extensively discussed. The biographies of Chaitanya written in Bengal during the Goswami's lifetime reached Raj and were popular. And thus we know that with great eagerness Rupa and Sanatan read and discussed Kavikarnapur's early Sanskrit biography, the Krishna Chaitanya Charitamrita Mahakavya, written about a decade after Chaitanya's passing, and a copy of the work, partially in Rupa's hand, still exists in the library of the Vrindavan Research Institute. Vishnudas Goswami, a disciple of Krishnadas Kaviraj, he writes at the end of a manuscript of Kavikarnapur Mahakavya. He says, Srila Rupa, his elder brother Sanatan, and others who are extremely compassionate to the living beings of this world, my grand guru Srila Kashishvara, and also Paramananda Bhattacharya, listened again and again with great joy here in Braj to this Chaitanya Chandra Charitamrita, which is actually, this is how he calls the Krishna Chaitanya Charitamrita Mahakavya, which they constantly relish to their heart's delight. The amazingly gifted Kavikarnapur composed this text when he was 16 years old. My great master Rupa copied it in the year 1545 with his own lotus hand. Aware of that, a certain Vishnudas, the scribe, who is evil-minded, who has no love for Chaitanya even in his dreams, who seems lifeless and whose thoughts are greedy, now has collected it as the potent medicine that will heal his life. Similarly, Raghunath Das Goswami, who had lived in close proximity to Chaitanya during the latter's final years, spent 3 hours each day talking about the life of Mahaprabhu, so says Krishnadas, his friend, and Rupa and Sanatan, quote, who made him their third brother, would often visit him to discuss Chaitanya's acts. Gopal Bhatta's guru, Prabodhananda Saraswati, sang the praises of Vrindavan and the divine couple Radha and Krishna in works like the Vrindavan Mahimamrita and the Radha Rasa Sudhanidhi, but also composed a long poem of praise of Chaitanya, the Chaitanya Chandramrita, a work whose devotional intensity is unmatched in a tradition known for its devotional fervor. And those who have looked at the work know the sort of the mood of that as being a bit intense. Moreover, several composers of vernacular songs in praise of Chaitanya and his companions resided in Vrindavan. Paramananda Bhattacharya, the above-mentioned companion of Rupa and Sanatana, who is mentioned here in this passage, composed several songs in praise of both Chaitanya and Krishna, as did Chivananda Chakravarti, who composed several songs in praise of Chaitanya and Gadadhar. So there are some links with Nityananda's lineage, and the most prominent and most overlooked connection between Bengal and the Vrindavan community is with Gadadhar Pandit's lineage. Gadadhar reading the Bhagavata with Chaitanya. Gadadhar, who is often identified as Radha in the early literature of the tradition, was one of Chaitanya's most intimate companions, and though he remained in eastern India, his influence in Vrindavan is pronounced. Take Vrindavan's temples, for example. Rupa's Govindadev temple was run by followers of Gadadhar Pandit. Haridas Pandit, Rupa's immediate successor as the custodian of the temple, was a disciple of Anantacharya, who was a disciple of Gadadhar, and the custodian after him also came in this lineage, and I believe this is the case up until the present day. Ananta was a priest at the Govindadev temple, as were Chaitanya Dasa, another of his disciples, and Premi Krishna Das, a direct disciple of Gadadhar. The Gopinath temple was founded by Paramananda Pandit, who we have already seen in the above earlier as a Pada author, the Gopinath temple was headed by Madhu Pandit, who was also a disciple of Gadadhar, as was Bhavananda, a priest at that temple. At Sanatan's temple of Madan Mohan, there were also disciples of Gadadhar. Gopal Das Adhikari was the temple's first custodian after Sanatan, and one of the leading priests there was Krishnadas Brahmachari, whose disciple was Narayana Bhatta, the author of several important works of devotion on the sacred sites of Braj. There were other disciples of Gadadhar in Vrindavan at that time, Bhagavata Das, the above-mentioned Pada author Shivananda Chakravarti, and a Mukundananda. Bhugarbha Goswami, one of Rupa's close friends, quote, who spoke no other words except for talk of Gaur, was also a disciple of Gadadhar. No other leader has this many disciples in Braj in this period, and certainly not this many disciples in such prominent positions. The three temples discussed here, Madan Mohan, Govindadev, and Gopinath, are often considered to be the three principal temples in Vrindavan by Gaudiya Vaishnavas, mostly because Krishnadas refers to them, which is a point I'll come to in a moment. One of these temples is founded by disciples of Gadadhar, the Gopinath temple. One is run by disciples of Gadadhar, the Govindadev temple. And several priests at the third at Madan Mohan are from this Gadadhar's lineage. Radha Krishna Goswami, a disciple of Haridas Pandit, and the fifth custodian of the Govindadev temple, explains this as follows. This is from his Sadhana Deepika, which I think was meant as sort of a manual for the priests of the temple of the Govindadev temple. So he writes, following the order of Sriman Mahaprabhu of Chaitanya, Srila Rupa, who knows all, and Sri Sanatan assign their own worship in their own temples to the lineage of Sri Radha Gadadhar, to Gadadhar, who is Radha, who is the essential potency of Krishna's form, or the Mula Swarupa Shakti. Then too, Sri Rupa assigned it to the disciple of Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, Premi Krishnadas Goswami. Srila Sanatana Goswami assigned the worship of Sri Madana Gopala Deva to Sri Krishnadas Brahmachari, who was immensely intimate with him. Moreover, Radha, the beloved of these three blessed forms of Govindadev, Madan Mohan, and Gopinath, was revealed by Sri Haridas Goswami, Sri Krishnadas Brahmachari Goswami, and Sri Madhu Pandit Goswami. So Radha Krishna argues that the murtis of Radha that now stand at the side of these three murtis of Krishna were established by those three disciples of Gadadhar Pundit. There's a lot of other accounts of who established those. We know the Goswamis definitely did not have them, and they're of a later date. We were reading Janava is said to have established one of them.
So what's the word for revealed?
Prakashita. Radhakrishna, who is himself coming in the lineage of Gadadhar, is obviously keen to highlight the role of his own lineage in these temples. And it is uncertain whether Rupa and Sanatan did indeed entrust the care of their temples to Gadadhar Pandit's lineage for the reasons he gives, because he was Radha. That Gadadhar's disciples played a prominent role in these temples in the second half of the 16th century is clear, as we have seen. The prominence of Gadadhar's disciples is significant, particularly in the case of the Govindadev temple, which was entirely run by them. And though it is perhaps a stretch to count Rupa Goswami as a member of Gadadhar Pandit's lineage, as Radha Krishna claims, it is also not too great a leap, given that his temple is run by his disciples. Now, the implications for our inquiry are significant. The disciples of Gadadhar were known to be particularly staunch devotees of Chaitanya. As Krishnadas writes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, all the followers of Gadadhar Pandit are most blessed devotees, and for all of them, the love of their life is Sri Krishna Chaitanya. It is no coincidence that it is these disciples of Gadadhar, particularly those that served Govindadev, that commissioned Krishnadas to compose the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Krishnadas tells how Haridas Pandit, the custodian of the Govindadev temple, would organize public readings of Vrindavan Das's Chaitanya Bhagavata, which many Vaishnavas attended, and their desire to know more of Chaitanya's later life in Puri prompted Krishnadas Kaviraj, whose close friend Raghunath Das had for many years been the servant of Swarup Damodar, Chaitanya's closest companion, to begin writing the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is one of the big big question marks I have in this whole thing, is that as Tony has shown, Krishnadas theologically definitely you could argue sidelines Gadadhar, and yet, which is puzzling since the Gadadhar community asked him to write it. And we see, the Sadhana Deepika of Radha Krishna Goswami has a whole chapter on Gadadhar being Radha. And so it's clearly something that continues being seen there. But anyway, that's a whole other issue that I don't have answers to, but maybe some of you do. Now, what do the Goswamis have to say about Chaitanya theologically? And in most of what I've... I think one of the reasons why a lot of scholars have not have argued that there isn't a real theology of Chaitanya in their works is because their theology is expressed in the two types of compositions that most scholars ignore. One is Mangala verses, the opening verses of texts, and their own commentaries on those verses, which most readers kind of skip to get to the real stuff later on, but which, as Chris Minkowski here and others have shown, actually deserve our attention. And the other is in ashtakas and short poems, stotras, that generally are also ignored as being just expressions of devotion and not worthy of containing real theology, which people like David Bukta have shown is definitely not the case. Now, as I said, I'll focus here on Sanatan Goswami, since he has a very clear theology of Chaitanya, but also because he's not often talked about. And I'll come to Rupa towards the end of this. Now, Sanatan built his entire theology on commentaries written on the Bhagavata. And in the Bhagavata's theology, God descends to this world in each of the four ages, Satya, Treta, Dwapara, and Kali, in order to teach a specific form of worship. Normally, these descents in each age are but partial manifestations of God's power, as Sanatan argues, but according to Sanatan, once in every cosmic cycle, or during the Dwapara age in the 24th cycle of the 7th Manu period in a day of Brahma, to be precise, God descends in all his fullness, desiring various pastimes of great love. This is the advent of Krishna, who appeared in Braj at the very end of the last Dwapara age. He is the fullest and original manifestation of divinity, of whom all other descents are but partial manifestations. Now, in the opening verses of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatana's most important work, Sanatana offers his respects to Krishna and explains how Krishna relates to Chaitanya. He writes, in these verses, as well as in his own commentary, the Digdarshini on those verses, he outlines his theology of Chaitanya. And this is how he starts the work. So, there you go. This is the opening verse. So, Jayate Nija Padabja Prema Dana Vatirna Vividha Madhuri Mabdi Kopika Ishora Gandhi Gata Paramadashantam Yasya Chaitanya Rupat Anubhava Padamaptam Prema Gopishu Nityam. Triumphant is that special ocean of varied sweetness that bears the fragrance of youth, who has descended to grant love to his own lotus feet. His perpetual love for the gopis, reaching the limit of the ultimate state, has obtained the state of experience by his form of Chaitanya. Sanatana's commentary on this verse is long, but it warrants close study as it illustrates well what place Chaitanya occupies in his devotion to Krishna. In this book he begins, devotion to the Blessed Lord is described. Devotion grants dharma, wealth, pleasure and liberation, but in it one finds an abundance of joy that is infinitely greater even than the experience of Brahman's bliss. Now, the devotion that will be described here in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita is only in regards to Gopinath's lotus feet, and therefore this devotion is to be understood to be pure love or prema, more specifically that love which is absolutely greatest, which has no regards for anything else, namely the pure love of the people of Sri Nanda's cowherd village. And then he goes on to say that specifically the gopis, that's the bhakti that he will describe. Anyway, we can skip some of his commentary there. But the interesting thing is that Sanatana Goswami, in his initial reading of his own verse, it's all about Krishna. It's Krishna descends. Krishna is the special ocean of varied sweetness. Krishna bears the fragrance of youth, in that he never grows old. Krishna descends to grant love to his own lotus feet in Mathura, and so on. At some point he says, well, one may object, the Lord who is like this, that is Sri Krishna Chandra, resides in the blessed realm of Goloka, beyond even Vaikuntha. Because he's extremely difficult to obtain, even the enormous grace needed to describe the greatness of devotion to him is rarely obtained, and thus the effort to do so is utterly pointless. So, what you're trying to do is you won't succeed. But he's, in response to this, Sanatana highlights the magnanimity or the audarya of Krishna. He has descended to grant love to his own lotus feet. In order to give this love, Sanatana explains, he has descended from Goloka to earth, to Mathura, and thus, by his grace, this is now easily obtained. Krishna descends for this because this love is rare, and he does not descend to kill Kamsa and other demons, which anyone can do. That's Sanatana's argument. His love for the gopis is eternal, and that by which, quote, the limit of the ultimate state is obtained, is that love. Because he descended to grant love to his own lotus feet, and here you have a quote. So just keep in mind that this is still, he's talking about Krishna still. Because he descended to grant love to his own lotus feet, this love can also be obtained by others, by his grace. But he shows that this love is utterly great by stating that he has love for the gopis, that Krishna has love for the gopis. So, in other words, so the love of the gopis is difficult to obtain, and that's great because even Krishna desires that love. Although those that love him are also the object of his love, he has still as much love for them as they have love for him. But the gopi's love for him is eternally perfect, it is nitya siddha, and without limits. And therefore it is naturally proven that they whose love is perpetual are especially great. Moreover, the word perpetual, nityam, in the verse, makes it clear that he's never in any manner indifferent to them, even a little. And so that's his sort of the theology of Krishna and devotion to Krishna and the devotion of the gopis that he outlines in the entire work. And note, he hasn't said anything about Chaitanya yet. And he says, to this, one may object again. Well, if they are like this, if the gopis are like this, are so rarely obtained and so difficult to understand, then how can you even conceive of their greatness, since their greatness is beyond the capacity of thought? And Sanatan responds, he says, this is true. But because his descent has special power, the verse states, by his form of Chaitanya. His, yesya, here indicates that he comes immediately after Krishna. By him, anyway, then you get sort of a technical analysis. By him whose form or descent is known as Chaitanya is obtained the state, that is the resolution for or the object of experience, even of a direct manifestation, what to speak of knowledge. Anyway, I don't want to get into that. But then he says, this is what this means. Though Sri Chaitanya Deva is certainly a descent of the Lord, because he descends himself to reveal the special devotion of love or prema bhakti, which he personally manifests the emotions of the gopis to accomplish that. Thus, as his direct greatness is that he is the only friend of the poor and wretched, all contemporary people, even the poor, have direct experience of the Lord's love for the gopis. Therefore, because it has been experienced, it is not difficult to describe what he set out to do, what the author set out to do. Namely, to describe that. In the next verse of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Sanatan continues to praise the gopis and Radha in particular, and returns to the identity and importance of Chaitanya in the third verse, which you have here. Svadaita nijabhavam yo vibhavya svabhavat sumaduramavatirno bhakta rupena lobhat jayati kanaka dhama krishna chaitanya nama haririhayati vesha shri shachi sunuresha. It's a nice rhyming in the end. Realizing that the emotions of his own beloved are so much sweeter than his own, he descends out of greed as a devotee. Triumphant is he here, Hari, whose splendor is golden, dressed as an ascetic called Krishna Chaitanya, this son of Sri Shachi. In his commentary on this verse, Sanatan resumes the discussion from his commentary on the first verse. In the previous verse, he described the extraordinary nature of Radha and the other gopis' love for Krishna, who declares that he, God himself, can never appropriately reciprocate their love. And now Sanatan raises the same objection again. Well, how then can you even begin to describe this? And Sanatan writes, he intends to give the same answer as before. He's talking about himself in the third person, obviously. And in order to obtain the grace of the sole deliverer of all poor and wretched people who spreads the rasa of devotion primarily through the congregational singing of his own name, the dearmost descent of the Blessed Lord, the greatest of all gurus, Sri Chaitanya Deva, and he describes his supreme excellence in this verse. Realizing that the emotion of his own devotees is so much sweeter than his own love, he descended here on earth in Gaur, in Navadvip, as his own devotee, greedy for such emotions. That son of Shachi, or Hari, is triumphant. What is he like? His splendor or luster is golden, that is, he is the beautiful Gauranga. This, Esha, implies that he was at that time personally present and living. In other words, Sanatan started writing this while Chaitanya was still alive, presumably in Puri. What Hari himself could formerly not describe, his own devotees can now experience in this descent as a devotee. It should be understood that he descends as a devotee, as he's characterized by the phrase, dressed as an ascetic. Hence, in order to spread the rasa of his devotion, he proclaims what it means to be a devotee by personally performing such devotional acts as congregationally singing his name and praying like a devotee. And thus, the devotion with love or prema bhakti to the Lord, which is utterly rare to obtain, is spread everywhere in the age of Kali, and Sri Shachinandana, or Chaitanya, wearing the dress of the best of sannyasis, is a descendant of the Lord. This is the gist. Okay, as is hopefully clear by now, it is unambiguous that for the Goswamis, Chaitanya is none different from Krishna. He is Krishna, who has the form of Chaitanya, who is Chaitanya Rupa or Chaitanya Akriti, and this is a phrase that recurs in all the Goswamis' writings. Is Krishna who has the form of Chaitanya. This expression is not a careless one. The Goswamis developed a complex and precise theology of descents or avatars, and the way they express their views of Chaitanya's relation to Krishna in the above-cited passages is highly significant. In the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, meant to be a theological distillation of Sanatana's narrative Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Rupa distinguishes between four types of descents. There are descents of possession, or avesha, when God enters into a living being and empowers him with his potency. There are descents of power, or prabhava, and descents of greatness, or vaibhava, which are manifestation in which only part of God's power is manifested. The former often manifest only briefly in this world and include the descents of the four ages, the yuga avatars, which has come to establish the dharma of the age, as well as the divine authors of various scriptures, like Dhanvantari, Rishabha, Vyasa, and Kapila. Finally, there are the descents of the Supreme Form, or the Paravasta, which are the completest manifestations of God, in which the six qualities, the six divine qualities, are fully manifest. There are only three such descents, Rupa argues, Nrisimha, Rama, and Krishna. Krishna, however, excels even those other two forms in sovereignty, in Aishwarya, and most importantly, in sweetness or Madhurya. His is the only form that does not depend on another, but is God's own form, or Swayamrupa, from whom all the other forms are but partial displays of power, and Krishna is thus the beginningless beginning, the cause of all causes. This is all rather technical, but my point is this. It is important to note that according to Rupa, none of these different forms which Krishna manifests in this world are temporary manifestations. Each of these divine forms of these different avatars, even the ones that appeared very briefly, exist eternally in the divine realm. And when they appear in this world, they are thus, technically speaking, not the sense of Krishna, but the sense of themselves. They're just forms, eternal forms that briefly manifest in this world. As S.K. Day notes, Rupa does not discuss Chaitanya's place in this typology of descents in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, but in a way he does not have to. In the beginning of the work, he cites Bhagavata 11.5.32, a very important verse for the tradition that I won't have time to get into, which is said to point to the identity of Chaitanya, the divine identity of Chaitanya. But in the beginning of the work, citing this verse, Rupa establishes that Chaitanya is identical with Krishna, and that his descent is thus a descent of Krishna, whose luster, or rather the luster of Radha and the gopis, which he takes on, makes him only appear differently, and that is golden. Chaitanya is not a descent of a part of Krishna's power, but Krishna in all his fullness, hidden by that golden luster. Because only he himself would be able to even approximate the exalted and pure love of the gopis, which, as we've seen, Sanatana says this is the reason he descends, to make that accessible. As Rupa expresses it in one of his Chaitanyashtakas, his shorter poems in praise of Chaitanya, that which is in no way given in the Vedas or the Upanishads, and that which you yourself, as any other descent, even the greater ones, cannot reveal, O ocean of rasa, those jewels of devotion you are now scattering over the earth. Therefore, and this is again a quote from one of his poems, the most subtle thinkers like Sarvabhauma Whether the best of gurus or even a divine descent can never describe you. What clever person is superior to you? Chaitanya is thus Krishna and embodies his incomparable sweetness or charm. This is illustrated in the way Rupa describes Chaitanya in his Chaitanyashtakas. And I want to, I'll skip some of that for purposes of time. Or just to conclude that section, as Raghunath Das Goswami expresses it, O mind, always remember Sachi's son as the son of Nandishwara's king, as Krishna, Devana. As we can see now, to characterize the Goswami's worship of Chaitanya as a means to an end is a gross oversimplification which does not accurately reflect the complexity of their theological reasoning. The Goswamis did not worship Chaitanya in order to worship Krishna, but the worship of Chaitanya is an end in itself, because Chaitanya is Krishna. And this is particularly well illustrated by the worship of Kashishvara Pandit. Kashishvara was a companion of Chaitanya and Puri, who was sent to Vrindavan on Chaitanya's order. One day, Chaitanya sent Kashishvara to Vrindavan to live with Rupa and Sanatan. Kashishvara, however, was reluctant to leave his master, and Chaitanya therefore gave him an image of Krishna, telling him, "Know that I am non different from him, from this Murti." When he reached Vrindavan, Kashishvara installed the image on Govindadeva's right side on the altar of Rupa's temple, where Kashishvara served as one of the main priests. The image, known as Gaura Govinda, was worshipped by the Vrindavan devotees as Chaitanya, and Kashishvara was celebrated as the devotee, as you have in this verse, controlled by whose affection Chaitanya Deva himself compassionately came to the western region. Image worship of Chaitanya was in this period still very rare, but Chaitanya's devotees in Braj, including Rupa Goswami, thus worshipped him as Gaura Govinda in the very heart of Braj. The Govinda Dev temple is situated on the Yogapita, the pericarp of the lotus mapped onto the land of Braj, the seat of Yogamaya, who arranges the play of Radha and Krishna, and thus in the very heart of the sacred landscape. That Chaitanya, who is by that time already regarded as Krishna, who experiences the emotions of Radha, is worshipped as Govinda in the place where the divine couple unite, is of course theologically highly suggestive. As Kashishvara's worship of Gaura Govinda beautifully illustrates, for the Goswamis to worship Govinda is to worship Gaura, and to worship Gaura is to worship Govinda. The advent of Krishna in this world necessitates the advent of himself as Chaitanya, for without descending as Chaitanya, Krishna's gift, his extraordinary amorous play with the gopis, remains inaccessible to the world. Unless Krishna demonstrates the purity and constancy of the gopis' love by experiencing it himself as Chaitanya, this highest form of devotion remains ever beyond our comprehension and beyond our reach. Chaitanya thus gives access to Krishna's amorous play with the gopis, but by worshipping Radha and Krishna, one is repeatedly brought back to Chaitanya, because he fully embodies them. Chaitanya is therefore not just a means to enter the play of Krishna in Vrindavan, but also its constant point of reference. Very brief conclusion. The Goswamis are thus clearly not silent on Chaitanya, and the longer paper is a lot more in there, and place him at the heart of their theology of devotion. And yet, why did the Goswamis not emphasize Chaitanya more in their writings and articulate a comprehensive Chaitanyology, as Ken once puts it, in their principal theological writings? Or, to put it differently, following SKD, why did Jiva write a Krishna Sandarbha, but not a Chaitanya Sandarbha? At least in the early decades of their stay in Vrindavan, the Goswamis seem to have attempted to develop a Vaishnava culture that transcended sectarian boundaries. It seems to me that though they clearly considered themselves followers of Chaitanya and were seen as such by others, and though they held to their own distinct doctrines and methods of devotional practice, they nevertheless also desired to find a common ground with other Vaishnavas present in Braj at the time. Perhaps the strongest indication of this ecumenicism is found in Sanatana's commentary on Gopal Bhatta's Hari Bhakti Vilasa. And here I'm treading softly, since we have an expert on the Hari Bhakti Vilasa here. The Hari Bhakti Vilasa is an encyclopedic work on Vaishnava ritualism and is clearly meant to accommodate a wide range of Vaishnava traditions. Its repeated references to Chaitanya, however, could lead a reader who is not a devotee of Chaitanya to lose interest in the text, considering it to be merely yet another sectarian manual. In his commentary on the Hari Bhakti Vilasa, Sanatan seems to have some of those other Vaishnavas in mind, and he offers alternative readings for those that might take offense at the praise of Chaitanya as divine. In the opening verse of the Hari Bhakti Vilasa, Gopal Bhatta brings homage to Chaitanya. He says, "I seek refuge in the Lord, Chaitanya Deva, as I write for the pleasure of the blessed Vaishnavas." And Sanatan comments as follows. Beginning this very difficult task of writing the Hari Bhakti Vilas, the author first seeks refuge in his beloved deity, who is his grand teacher. He was the guru of Prabodhananda, who is Gopal Bhatta's guru, in order to attain success in this endeavor. And so Gopal Bhatta uses the word Chaitanya Deva. So he says, "The god or Deva whose form is consciousness or pure awareness is to be worshipped by the entire world. That is, he's worshipped among the gods. Among the gods, he's the embodiment of awareness. Alternatively, he who is the god or governing deity of consciousness or awareness is Sri Vasudeva in Pancharatra system. Alternatively, what is meant is that God or the Lord is his consciousness or awareness. That is, it is the reason he lives and thus refers to the Lord of his life." So Sanatana Goswami gives all these sort of different ways of understanding Chaitanya Deva as being referring to some very fairly generic Vaishnava readings. But then he says, in his own opinion, in Gopal Bhatta's own opinion, Sri Chaitanya Deva is a well-known name of the Lord. That is, it is a name of Mahaprabhu, of Chaitanya. By the greatness of his grace, nothing is difficult for one like me who has taken refuge in him, but everything is very easily accomplished. That is what is meant. Sanatana offers similar readings throughout his commentary on the Hari Bhakti Vilas. For example, in his introduction to chapter 6, Gopal Bhatta refers to Sri Chaitanya, and Sanatana explains that this refers to the Lord, Krishna, who is the life or consciousness Chaitanya of Sri or Mahalakshmi. And then adds, "Or, in the opinion of the author, this is Sri Sachinandana, who is himself known as Sri Chaitanya, because he makes everyone aware about devotion to himself." I can give more examples like this. And you can sort of see Sanatana sort of repeatedly trying to sort of say, you know, if you don't like this as being praise of Chaitanya, here's another way in which any Vaishnava could read this and sort of accept this and be comfortable with this. We see the relations with other Vaishnavas in this period, the Goswamis with other Vaishnavas is quite extensive. There's a lot of different groups there. But just to highlight one, this is of Vallabha, who initially resided in Gokul, and then his son moves to Mathura. There's extensive contact between the two. Rupa and Sanatan are said to have studied the Bhagavata with him. Sanatan, in his own commentary on the Bhagavata, refers to Vallabha's commentary on the Bhagavata. Rupa in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu draws parallels between his system and that of Vallabha. The Murti you have here of Sri Nadji is a Murti that's said to, well, depending on which tradition you ask, but generally it's seen, at least in the early texts, to have been found by Madhavendra Puri, who was the guru of Chaitanya's guru, but then entrusted to Vallabha and his sons and his disciples. And We know that the Goswamis went to worship Srinathji when Srinathji was in the house of Vitalnath, of Vallabha's son, in Mathura. Krishnadas claims they stayed there for 2 months worshipping Srinathji. And Raghunath Das Goswami wrote several poems in praise of Srinathji, at the end of one of which he has 3 verses in praise of Vitalnath, of Vallabha's son, as you know, the one of the greatest Vaishnavas. And so we see that there is a very close relationship that they're sort of had with these other groups, that they're consciously trying to develop, which ends kind of by the early 17th century, when there's lots of disputes over property and money and royal grants. And you see then the two traditions really growing apart. There's some depictions of Vallabha that are not very flattering in Gaudiya texts from that period onwards, and of his sons. And there are, on the Vallabha side, Vallabha's grandson has this doctrine of Anyasha. He says the followers of Vallabha should not seek refuge in anything that is different from what Vallabha taught, including other temples, which meant that the Kushti Margis, the followers of Vallabha, were forbidden to go to, by their own people, to go and worship in the Gaudiya temples and other temples. Now, the big sort of, the part of this that I haven't done yet, which is something that Lucien has been sort of urging me to get into, is kind of trying to figure out where that sort of vision, or that view that the two were so divided, and that there was such a big schism in the early tradition between Bengal and Braj when it comes to the theology of Chaitanya, where that comes from. Sort of encouraged by him, I'm sort of thinking in the direction of the 19th century in Bengal, with this sort of re-emergence of devotion to Chaitanya, sort of connected to regionalism that Varuna Bhatia and others have written about. But that's kind of still something that I have to do. But I think it's no coincidence that we see this particularly strongly articulated in Bengali authors, who, for various reasons, like to sort of draw that distinction. Hitesh Ranjan Sanyal, there's a strong Marxist side to it as well in his views. But anyway, that's all I have to say for now.
I don't believe that.
What do you not believe?
That's all you have to say.
I thought you said everything I said. I don't believe any of that.